Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your terrible at improv boy.
And I'm Xavier, your Bishonen DJ for the evening.
All right. Before we start, I want to let everyone know that this show is not intended for kids, even if our favorite shows are totally intended for kids.
All right. So you ready to get into it?
Of course.
So, this time we're going to talk about openings and anime music in general, probably. I expect that's where this will go, because we're big music nerds.
Yeah. We know too many people with music degrees for us to not talk about music for hours. But the format for today, I think we're kind of just going to start off going through OPs we like, or do you have like a general topic overview you want to do?
So I do want to get into OPs that we like super quick, basically.
Okay.
But just as like a general thing, because we've never talked about this, what do you think makes a good OP? Because we're going to get into like, I think, universally good examples of OPs, but what makes them good to you?
Okay. So there's a couple components that make up an OP, obviously, right? The visual and the song. And I'm thinking through a lot of my favorite OPs. And some of the through lines, right, are either just generally good music. I know that's kind of the vague term, right? But I know openings with good visuals that are ruined by a song that is either like wildly off tone or a song that just generally is of kind of low quality, right? As well as I personally like it a lot when the visuals of the opening allude to things in the series, but they don't have to be direct. I like things getting kind of weird. I just personally, in my taste, like things getting a little crazy with the aesthetic in the openings, but I know that's not to everyone's taste.
And I know you're really into visual metaphor too. I think for me, what makes a worthwhile anime opening is a little bit of visual storytelling. I know that a lot of anime, because of the seasonal structure, end up spoiling a lot of things in the visuals for the opening. I like it when it's a little bit more subtle, but I'm never going to like take points off for spoiling something. It's just sort of comes with the ground of anime openings. I like for the music to be enjoyable to listen to. And I'm not saying like it has to be high energy all the time, but I want it to fit the theme of my series. An anime opening that I think does this really well, for instance, though fails in some other respects, is Unravel for Tokyo Ghoul. Fits the theme really well, I think is a good song. Normally when I listen to music, I also like to analyze the lyrics, and I also do this with anime openings, but I'm not a native Japanese speaker, and my knowledge of Japanese extends to essentially I can read it pretty decently, like katakana, hiragana, that kind of thing, but my pronunciation and actual like speech recognition isn't that well, so I have to go out of my way to read the lyrics.
I'm thinking of some OPs that do like tone really well from like the song to the show, and the things that come to mind quickly are I think both of the Death Note OPs.
Yeah, and I remember talking with some friends about this very topic, and the Death Note OPs come up a lot because the world is a very polarizing OP, or at least I found it to be very polarizing in discussion, where some people think the world fits very, very well. And some people think that without the reference for, like, the lyrics of the world, that the tone seems too, like, hard rock for what's going on as, like, a subtle psychological drama.
That's true, right? And a lot of people continue that conversation by talking about the second OP, which honestly hits, like, an even harder metal, almost screamo at points kind of thing, which I think fits that part of the story better, right? Because I'm a big Death Note OP is a really good advocate, even without the lyrics. I don't think you need to read the lyrics of the world to kind of see the tone shifts going from first OP to the second over the series. Death Note spoilers here. The Death Note... See, I took more time there, because last time you yelled at me for saying that Kamina died too fast. so I took more time this time. L dies partway through Death Note, which is the thing that most of you should know. And I think the tone of the second opening fits way better post L's death, with like N and M being introduced to the series. So that's kind of my defense of OP2 for Death Note. But yeah, I think anime openings in general obviously have a lot of different things going on. Is there any other things that you think are like necessary or really common for a good OP before we just start talking about them?
I think it's important to note, I don't think this is necessary for a good OP, but a lot of OPs are produced by actual performing artists in like the Japanese Billboard charts and in the Japanese music world. And that's not something you see a lot of anymore in American cartoons, which always made me really sad. Like, learning that Real Big Fish did the Rave Master OP was like really fun.
Yeah. That's something I've noticed over the many years of seeing anime OPs, right? Are one that I'm going to talk about today. The band that made the opening just put out a single in January that we both really, really enjoyed, right? And it's kind of this across the industry thing of like hiring big name artists to produce your songs. And I don't want to spoil any of our lists because this point I think will become really, really obvious once we start talking about them, but I see where you're going.
Yeah, and like it's not even so, for instance.
Yeah.
I guess the equivalent of this would be like, it's not even like a SoundCloud rapper artist making an OP because they're a fan. Like, people as big as Gackt will come down and make OPs for things like Tokusatsu TV and things like anime. Like, Gackt did Kamen Rider Decades OP, and that was a big fucking deal.
Yeah, what American examples, like, can you even think of? Honestly, first of all, most American television isn't really doing song OPs as much anymore, right? Looking at Gravity Falls, which just sort of has an instrumental, or Adventure Time, which just has its sort of very sing-songy, plucky, short, almost poetic opening, you know?
Yeah, and I think that, like, lyrically, a lot of American openings have sort of fallen behind. I also think that we've also lost some of our original song flavor. So the example I always use for like American TV having really good songs, and then you can see the decline really easily, all of the Power Rangers OPs up to Samurai, and even Samurai was like an homage to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers OP, but like they kept going with that sort of lazy route after Samurai, and it just showed like, along with the weird bridging of the Super format, where you had Samurai and then Super Samurai, Mega Force and then Super Mega Force, they were getting lazier with the openings when Power Rangers had like some really good original songs that are still worth listening to.
So you're letting out your Tokusatsu love here, and I'm going to need you to rein it in like a tiny bit, just like a little bit.
Look, I am letting out my Tokusatsu love to drive home a point about American television.
Are any of your OPs, just tell me, are any of your OPs from Tokusatsu shows, did you sneak a Kamen Rider OP in on me for this discussion?
Not planned, but if you want me to just start rattling off Kamen Rider OPs or Kamen Rider music, especially from Kamen Rider O's, which had some of the best music, and Kiva. I got that.
Kiva has a banging soundtrack, I'll be real. I have not seen much Kamen Rider, sadly. But you have showed me so much Kamen Rider. Honestly, an obscene amount of Kamen Rider music at like 2 a.m, just weeks on end. You'd be like, you want to watch some Kamen Rider, Trey, right now? And Kiva has my favorite Kamen Rider soundtrack that I've heard. So I wouldn't blame you, but that's me.
That said, let's get into like the meat and potatoes of this episode. Trey, what is the first thing on your list for talking about good anime OPs?
So before we go into it, I want to clarify, we limited ourselves to trying to not pick like the most famous things ever, because every single human being knows that Cowboy Bebop's opening Tank is incredible, right? And we also limited it to one per series, more or less. So I'm going to go ahead and say basically my favorite anime opening ever, Again by Yui for Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
which is just an amazing song. And I know, like, why I like it, but, like, what's hits it for you?
So, first of all, emotional attachment to Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. It was one of the first things I watched upon becoming, like, a real anime fan, which is a thing that happens to a lot of people, right? Again, like all the OPs of that series, has stuck with me for a while, and I like all of these songs, even in the original Fullmetal Alchemist. I think every one of the 9 OPs is good. But the visual storytelling in Again, I think, is above and beyond most of what happens in the other OPs, as well as the fact that I personally enjoy Yui's music outside of this and just think this song is fantastic, right? The visual effects animation, specifically on, like, the fire heart at the start of the opening, or on the lightning when the, like, visual metaphor part of the OP happens and you see Winry and the Elric brothers, like, shake, right? And the shake
buffeted by the wind.
Yeah. And the shaking buffeted by the wind, you see Ed lose an arm and a leg, you see Alphonse literally dissipate into dust, and then you just see Winry shaking because her entire world has been rattled by the loss of her 2 closest friends, basically, as they go on this journey. And, like, the music hits really hard right as that scene hits, and it's the kind of emotional moment in an opening that'll stick with me basically forever, as well as there just being a bunch of really excellently edited and excellently animated introductory scenes for characters like Roy Mustang and Hawkeye and Lust, etc., etc.
Yeah, I think for me it's sort of the same in that Full Metal Alchemist is just a quality show, especially like Brotherhood, and I think that that probably colors our bias for certain openings a little bit when the show attached to it is really good. But also the visual storytelling is on point. It uses sort of this structure that a lot of anime openings will use with the character intros, but I never feel like, okay, get through the list. It always feels new and fresh, and it's this frenetic build-up as, like, the music starts to come in, and they're popping literally up most of the time. Yeah. When they're coming in, or, like, sliding in from the sides, which I think is a really nice touch. I also think that thematically, Yui's voice just is perfect for Full Metal Alchemist. She has a very sweet, innocent voice, and you can tell she's, like, pushing herself to get out these more raw vocals, and it just fits really well with the innocence lost style of Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible how Yui's voice basically feels like Edward's personality in, like, the weirdest way, and it feels like Edward's arc is Yui's voice, which I know is some of the most abstract stuff I've ever said on this podcast. But I feel like anyone who has seen the series, or even just the OP, could probably gather that and come to a similar conclusion.
Yeah, I agree. I think she was just basically in the right place at the right time and did an amazing job. I also think it's really hard to emulate her performance. So if you're in the anime community, you probably know that YouTube has a giant and amazing community of dubbers for anime openings who will do direct translations to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
And dub over the song. Amelie and Nate Wants to Battle have very different interpretations of how Again sounds and what the translation is, but I don't think either of them just capture the same range of emotions. And it's not because they're not great singers, they're amazing performers. It's just one of those one in a million performances.
Oh, yeah, right. Because I listen to a lot of Amelie. I have multiple of her albums downloaded, or multiple of the compilation OP dub albums that she has on iTunes on my phone for when I'm, like, driving around. And I love almost everything she's done. And I even think her version of Again is good. But she just doesn't hit the raw highs that Yui does. And I think we're both in agreement here. If not for that, like, one in a million performance, I think this OP would suffer.
I agree. Because on face value, if you listen to Amelie and if you listen to Yui outside of this particular opening, they have very similar voice qualities. Not like their pitch is exactly the same, but their style of singing is very similar in my eyes, at least, or my ears in this case. Haha. But I just think Yui brought a lot more emotion.
Yeah, and that that's not to discredit Amelie or anything. It's just sort of the way it is. But that's about what I've got to say on the opening. We could always dive more into these, right? But I think it's your turn, I guess.
Yeah. So I want to start harkening back to our Gateway episode, even though like it's entirely too early to be doing callbacks, but fuck it.
Dude, we had a running gag about Log Horizon getting a third season.
Which I still don't know is true. I refuse to look it up.
It's too late. Like, we can do callbacks at this point. Look, we're on iTunes now. We're professionals. That's how it works. Make all the right
moves you want. I will say, Log Horizon OPs, okay, not spectacular. Not going to mention them, but I really hope we get that season 3 and maybe that OP will be amazing.
All right, what's your OP?
My first OP is OP1 for Gundam Wing, even though both OPs for Gundam Wing are fucking amazing and they're done by the same people. It's a J-pop duo called 2MIX and the song Just Communication. So Just Communication is a very somber, soft song that has, when it gets to the chorus, suddenly ratchets up in energy and then goes back to being an emotional ballad. And also the visuals for it, for the most part, are the Gundams in the individual places where they're deployed, because at first all of the Gundam pilots are not together, doing whatever they were doing in that area. So you start to get a feel for the characters and what kind of story this is going to be, because almost all of the backgrounds are clearly war-torn. It's also of note that because of when Gundam Wing was made, all of this is still cel-shaded. So it already has a grittier appeal that makes emotional songs pop a little bit more.
It's gorgeous. For those who haven't seen it, go watch it. It's not like it has incredible animation quality or anything, even though, you know, it's not bad. The art style and aesthetic alone of this opening is insane, and I love it. But
it also does something weird that I find really interesting, and it's also done in OP2 to the point where fans think it's like one of the defining features of OP2, and Crunchyroll had to do a re-upload after taking this out. It has sound that's not in the OP. So in OP1, when they're doing the Gundam introductions and the Gundams are like doing cool shit, as is done in OPs, you can hear the sounds of the machines moving under the music. And in OP2, the beginning of it is Heroes, Gundam Wing Zeroes. Yeah, I said that. The radar for that, beeping. And the beeping slowly ratcheting up until it's super loud, and then the song starts. And Crunchyroll had to re-upload it because fans really like the beep.
That's really cool. I like that a lot. That's a fun detail.
And I just think it carries the emotion of the series really well. I know you haven't watched Gundam Wing, and even though it does have a lot of silly elements, Gundam Wing is legitimately 90% politics, 10% fights.
Well, that, as good Gundam should be, as I do salute. So I think what we're kind of getting at here is different styles of OP, right?
Yeah.
So would you say that Just Communication is like a really good setup OP, I guess, if we were to try and classify it, like for the series?
I think that it's one of those OPs that inspires awe. So when I think of like Yui, and again, I think of an OP that you begin to appreciate as you watch the series more and more.
Yeah.
Not saying that's not a good standalone song, but the first time you see that OP, it's not the OP that's drawing you in. It's Full Metal Alchemist, or at least in my opinion.
Of course.
I think Gundam Wing legitimately draws you in through its OP and inspires this sort of shock and awe in a way that few anime series do, but it's definitely been done before. Like Dragon Ball Z's OPs through the years do this exact same thing, where yes, I'm watching it because it looks cool, but the OPs put me in that space of I really want to watch Dragon Ball.
From my personal experience of watching this opening one time in pre-production, I think you hit the nail on the head and are just correct. At least personally. We have a Twitter now, so if you think what we're saying is stupid and wrong, you can just yell at us on Twitter, at SatAnimePod, SatAnimePod. We almost got a much better name. We almost got like a Sat Morn anime podcast. It was 16 characters and they only let you have 15, and it was one of the most disappointing moments of our entire lives. But
hit it was a big sigh.
Yell at us on Twitter if you think for whatever reason he's wrong about Gundam Wing.
Which is completely fair. Another thing, and after this I'm going to get off of Just Communication, because I could gush about Just Communication for like a long, long time and take up the majority of our time. Another thing Just Communication does really well when we talk about tone, in the same way that Yui captures the essence of Fullmetal Alchemist Innocence Lost, Just Communication, like I said, only ratchets up during the chorus, which is like just wild beat communication. That's the chorus. And like I said, Gundam Wing is about 90% politics on whether or not you should be able to commit atrocities in war, essentially, if it's for the greater good. And then ratchets up for the fight scenes and then goes back down to a character drama. So even in that, it's mirroring the structure of the series and the punctuation of the series, while including some of the most iconic moments, like things like Tall Geese versus Gundam Wing.
Sweet. All right. I think that's a pretty damn good description of Gundam Wing's OP, at least for someone who hasn't seen the series.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's on you.
Okay. This next OP, I will preface by saying, is one that I have seen critiqued for not getting the tone of the series correct. But I have a defense of this, and it is Flyers by a personal favorite band of both of ours, Bradio, for the anime Death Parade. And this OP is very happy, it is very uppity, the beat is funky, every character in the visuals is having a good time, some of them are getting drunk, they're mixing drinks, and that's great, until you realize the show is basically a philosophy TV show about death games, where all of these happy characters you're seeing at this bar are functionally living in purgatory and determining if people are good and get to go to like heaven and hell equivalents, but it's more like rebirth and disintegration.
Which I think is actually like perfect for the tone, and not even for the reason that like Death Parade has like super saturated colors and is mostly carefree. But I have some other thoughts about, like, death and joy and life. But please continue.
Yeah, so the first thing that I love about this OP, and I want to get to, like, the justifications for why this thing is perfect for Death Parade, because I think it is. First of all, Flyers by Bradio by itself is the kind of song that you cannot help but to sing along with. And it gets to the point where they even flash some of the lyrics and part of the beat on screen in like English language so you can sing along, because they acknowledge, wow, this song is that good. And it's the kind of song that even without the series, I have played for people like my family and they've been like, wow, this is a good song. Secondly, I just tend to love Death Parade, right? All of the series that I have picked OPs from are series that I love, except for one, which is a series that I have never seen. We'll get there. The oversaturated colors and the super expressive animation all fit really well with the song. I don't remember the studio who did Death Parade off the top of my head, but the motion of these characters dancing along, right, and the lighting work done in this OP are all just excellent. Through and through, this opening is gorgeous. You see some of the most serious characters in the series, like doing little peace signs with dice in between their fingers, like dancing along and having a great time. You see someone juggling alcohol bottles. But also in some of the visuals, you get these broad sweeping landscapes of the people who run this purgatory. And you get like these little hints, right, of things being a bit darker than they appear in the song, right? Which I think is perfect. But I do want to hear your thoughts on, like, why it fits.
Firstly, I just want to say, I think you hit the nail on the head for why it's just an enjoyable song. For those that don't know, Bradio is a funk and soul band, so naturally their music has a lot of Western influences and is just more palatable to Western taste. I also think it's interesting to note on the visuals of the Death Parade OP that although the characters are doing all these fun things like putting up peace signs and dancing, none of them are actually breaking character. So if you look at like one of the main character Deckham's face during the entirety, he is not really cracking a smile, and that's the kind of straight man he is in the series. It's almost like he's dancing because he has a duty to dance, which is exactly his character. He will do it because it's his duty to do it, and if he feels like he's messed up, he takes it very seriously. He's probably the most serious character in the series, I would say.
Yes, and while being the most serious character in the series, him and the basically protagonist, I guess, dance on top of like a pedestal surrounded by flying lights in this OP, but they don't really, they look like they're dealing with it. They don't really look like they're enjoying it, right? Like on their faces, because this opening has really, really expressive animation in the face and body language.
As for why I think that it actually fits the tone of it a lot, part of it has to do with the setting. So Purgatory in Death Parade is a bar. And to basically sort out who should get their soul obliterated and who should be reincarnated, you have to play a game. So already you're bringing in the sort of carefree element and flipping it on its head. Death games are nothing new, but Death Parade does it in a psychological and interesting way that almost makes you wonder about the nature of life and death. There's also almost always some turnaround about the death situation, similar to like American death or detective shows, that reveals more to the person's life. Bradio also took this song, or this song at least made it, onto an album called The Power of Life. So already the song is intermingling between life and death, and playing with these things. And we have a culture, and Japan has a culture, of celebrating the life of a person when they die. And in a way, Death Parade is a celebration, or even sometimes a damnation, of the way someone lived their life.
Yeah. First of all, that was fantastic. Second of all, watching the series, they're in like the first episode, there is a couple. I think they're newly married or they're engaged, whatever.
They're basically newlyweds. They're on their honeymoon.
They die in a car wreck or something, and they basically have to play darts against each other to the death. But when like the wife hits the dartboard on a certain area, it causes physical damage and pain to the husband on a corresponding body part. And throughout this thing, you watch the couple like try and avoid hurting each other until eventually, if I'm remembering correctly, because I haven't watched in a couple of years, the husband basically like goes crazy and gets super greedy about wanting to be reborn.
It's not about being reborn.
Yeah.
And spoilers.
I would suggest
if you have interest in like death game anime, go watch this episode of Death Parade before we say what we're about to say.
Yes.
Because this is the big twist. As they're playing the game, their memories of what happened start to come back.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily come back as a complete whole. So the husband is under the impression that his wife has been continuously cheating on him. And the child that she's with, because she died while pregnant, because he started an argument about this in the car and it resulted in a car crash, he basically says, "Tell me that's not my child." And the wife breaks down in tears and tells him what he wants to hear. But the first thing that you see in this series is, despite Deckham being the overseer of what's going on, and the character you should assume knows everything, it's actually the new character, who you could call the protagonist, who explains to him, "You haven't taken into account all the human factors of life. Clearly she made a mistake, really regretted it, and now wants to give her husband one last chance at being reborn."
Thank you for remembering every detail of that for me. I watched Death Parade when I was like 15.
That's fair. I actually recently, and when I say recently, I mean within like the last 3 months, did a rewatch of Death Parade, and that's the only reason it's fresh in my brain. But even that like goes back to what I was trying to say in the beginning of, there's this weird celebration of life and new life, and also of questions, because although we're celebrating because someone is being reborn, and because there's a morality that's being tested, and we want to feel good about making the same decision in the same way that Deckham feels comfortable, knowing what's going on because he's been doing this for so long. There's always factors of life, this thing that we claim that we're celebrating, that we don't take into consideration.
On that note, I just want you to take yours. Just what's the next OP? Just go. Just go. We did it. Hey, people who haven't watched Death Parade, you're allowed to come. You're allowed to come back now. I know they can't hear that, but they can come back now.
So that was really heavy and really analysis intensive. So I'm going to go to something way less analysis intensive. Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, get your game on.
Okay, that's not the OP I thought you were going to say.
No, the other two I have planned are super intense. So that's why I was like, wait a minute.
I know. Talk about Yu-Gi-Oh! GX to prevent me from singing it, because they don't need to hear us sing.
That's fair. So Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, for those of you who don't know, is the sequel, like a direct sequel, to the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Seasons that follows a beautiful young man named Jaden Yuki, who's everything that, like, boomers think millennials are. Jaden. Jaden is the meme. Jaden is a millennial and a zoomer all in one.
I agree. I've just never heard it put so perfectly. Thank you. Yeah, no.
And the song that was used in the West for Yu-Gi-Oh! GX was Get Your Game On, and it was this weird, like, power metal, almost rap about him just chilling with the homies. Like, one of the lyrics is literally me and my crew chilling in the schoolyard, finding trouble, never looking too hard.
In fact, chilling out with the crew in the schoolyard, finding trouble, never looking too hard, is the first lyric. That is lyric number one of the whole song.
And, like, I don't think, like, even, like, we're talking about all this highbrow shit, and, like, we've gone over, like, philosophical series. Like, the theme just fits so well. The song is just so happy and carefree and stupid. And the series, for the most part, until, like, the last season, is really just fun and carefree and stupid. And even when they're trying to be serious and doing, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Your soul is mine, like, bullshit. Oh, by the way, your professor, who turns out to be, like, a fucking thousands of year old immortal, his soul got eaten by his cat.
I, not to, like, get too into our personal lives, but I distinctly remember a night that had been kind of serious. And it had been a kind of serious week, and a lot of stuff was going on. And you and I and a bunch of other people got in two cars and were driving around. And I remember us parking next to their car. And then we needed to cheer ourselves up. And you and I sang the entire Yu-Gi-Oh! GX theme from memory to our car and the other car. And I've never seen a more emotional turnaround in my life.
Yeah, and it was one of those weird things, and I think this is just the power of anime openings. I'll stand by this. The people in the other cars, one person had seen Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. No one knew what we were doing, but everyone was just laughing and smiling and having a good time because of how ridiculous the lyrics and tone of this song are.
Especially with our beautiful performances. But, like, the lyrics continue. Well, back at class, they never taught us this. Some things you gotta learn, hit or miss.
It's just so ridiculous.
Even reading the lyrics, I can't help but to smile like an idiot, and I think that's kind of the point.
And I think this is one of the rare times where I think the West got it right. Like, this is, for me, this will never not be the definitive Yu-Gi-Oh! GX opening. And it's not even because it was my childhood. This is something I've revisited as an adult, and while I acknowledge that it's extremely cheesy, it's not a particularly good song. It does have a really good guitar riff, though.
That's true.
It just fits so well, and it never fails to make me happy and peppy.
Yeah, and the thing is, we talk about the visuals a lot, as we have, because so far every OP has had good visuals. Yu-Gi-Oh! GX and many of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime don't have particularly fantastic particularly fantastic visuals, right? And that's not a knock at Yu-Gi-Oh! It doesn't need to be super flashy. It's a turn-based card game anime. And
yeah,
this is seen in the opening. And normally, as Xavier knows, I love gorgeous visuals and gorgeous animation and Sakuga and the whole nine. I don't care that most of the Yu-Gi-Oh! GX opening is just still images sliding left or right or going up or down because the song is just that good.
Or reused footage from the series. Like, they pull that trick.
Most of it is reused footage from the series. That's the worst part. Most of this opening is like they gave an intern like the editing rights to go and just go through the series and edit some shit together and throw a song over it. But the song is just so cheesy perfect, you know, that I don't care.
It also does, like, legitimately have one of my favorite visual moments in a Yu-Gi-Oh! OP, and I forget what lyric this hits on, but the main character, Jaden Yuki, his dual school, dual academy, is on an island, and it's him, like, on a rock outside of the island, and a giant wave hits him and batters him down, and he gets up and does a fist pump. And, like, it's just so indicative of Jaden's character, because, like, this kid gets swatted down a lot. Despite, like, natural talent and generally being a good guy. Like, people just swat him down because he's too overenthusiastic. He's too good at what he does for the amount of effort that he puts in. And he learns to put in a lot more effort through his time at Duel Academy. But he always gets up.
Yeah. The only distinct visual I remember from the OP, I see a bunch of moving images in my head. I see various duel monsters flying left and right. But I can see every detail of Jaden Yuki standing up and, like, doing the fist pump drenched in water. And I think that is the perfect moment to move on to the next OP, unless you have something else to say.
No, just, like, this is what I mean when I say there was a decline. Because even 5Ds, which was the Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, I believe, directly after GX,
yes, 5Ds.
Has an amazing OP. And then after, you see a drop off, and you see all of these, like, anime OPs drop offs happen around the same time. And it's really weird that the West sort of lost, I won't say vision, but lost a lot of quality in original OPs and started just going with the Japanese versions.
I haven't seen all of them, but I have seen the first 5Ds opening and an opening from Zexal, and the 5Ds opening is a banger and the Zexal opening was bad.
That's how it'd be, unfortunately.
Is Zexal any good?
I enjoyed Zexal for what it was. Like, it wasn't the best. Like, Xyz summoning was a good mechanic, and I think they represented it really well, even though, again, the rules didn't mirror how it was actually implemented. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Really started going downhill as Pendulum, as far as the series, right? I'm not talking about the card game. I personally had no particular misgivings about Pendulum summoning in the actual card game, though I know some people really did. But I can't even remember the name, and it might have been like Arc V or something, but I can't even remember the name of the Pendulum summoning series because it just didn't capture me, which really sucked because it was supposed to be a celebration almost of all the different summoning types in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Kids, that was your sneak peek of the 15-hour-long series we're going to be, where we just talk about Yu-Gi-Oh! After he forces me to watch everything post, like, the first season of 5Ds that I haven't seen.
Also, as a weird aside, I haven't watched it yet. I have heard from friends that the Link summoning series actually pretty decent, and Soulburner would be my favorite character. Weird.
I will look into Soulburner after this episode, and I'll watch, like, one clip of them, and then I'll just tell you, because I know all of your tastes perfectly, obviously. That's what happens when you live with somebody. But
that's fair. Next one on the list, though.
The next OP is an OP for a series very near and dear to my heart, and very near and dear to the anime community's heart.
Oh.
It is Masatoshi Ono, lead singer of a metal band, making the pop song Departure for Hunter x Hunter. Yeah, woo, everybody cheer. I imagine, like, a crowd cheering because of how much everyone loves Hunter x Hunter. For those who don't...
I will cheer for the OP. I'll be honest. That's fair. Like, I love that OP.
So there's a lot of different versions of this OP, and that's something I need to address, because Hunter x Hunter is 148 episodes long. And it has a bunch of arcs, it has like 6 of them, and the opening changes for every arc, but the song stays the same. It is always Departure, which I think is really cool, because there are many parts of Hunter x Hunter where the main character focus shifts, or who might be considered the protagonist shifts, or what our main characters are doing shifts to the point where two main characters leave for half of the series. And I think this OP for me has a lot of lyrics that point to what the emotional core of Hunter x Hunter is for me, and for Digi, and for a lot of other people who are much smarter than me, which is the relationship between Gon and Killua. And in the same way that I see Gon and Killua as the emotional through line for 148 episodes of anime, that is how I feel about the musical aspect of Departure.
I think that that's entirely fair. I'm not as big a fan of Hunter x Hunter as you and a lot of other people are. I still think it's an amazing series. I see Departure as emblematic of what Hunter x Hunter is in a lot of ways, in that Hunter x Hunter is a story cycle. And what I mean by story cycles are this idea in literature of writing a bunch of stories that aren't necessarily even related to each other with a recurring cast of characters. And I think that Departure captures that, because Departure is very easily translatable onto a multitude of stories within the Hunter x Hunter universe. But also Hunter x Hunter does transfer protagonists so often. And I think that because of that, you could only go two routes. And that's a catch-all opening that understands all of the characters perfectly, or individual openings for each character. And I'm really glad they went with the catch-all, because I don't think it would have benefited from an opening for each character as a protagonist at all.
I agree 100%. And looking at the English lyrics to this song, Departure comes from the fact that "it's departure time" is a lyric in this song, and the entire series is about broad journeys, both across physical land and within one's own self. And the one through line of Hunter x Hunter, even from the fact that the series starts with someone going on a grand journey to find something, right, with Gon trying to find his father, the entire series is kind of a bunch of people going on broad journeys to find things, which I know applies to a lot of anime, but specifically in Hunter x Hunter, I actually don't know any character who isn't doing that other than, like, maybe Netero. So this OP just tracks really well with all of the details of Hunter x Hunter's story, as well as the fact that, while I don't think any of the visuals are particularly excellent in animation quality, right, I think every Hunter x Hunter opening visual change has fantastic editing and is structured in a really, really enjoyable way to where it never gets old. Even if you have to listen to Departure 148 times or see the same visual 60 times in a row for the Chimera Ant arc.
I would agree. And I think that, like, that really hits the nail on the head for the effectiveness of it, especially within the context of the story. And I just want to say, because this is one of my criticisms and a lot of people's criticisms about Hunter x Hunter, but it's also something I appreciate, how ill-defined what a hunter is. To the point where, like, without the certification for being a hunter could literally be anyone with a desire. And I think in the grand theme of Hunter x Hunter, being someone with a desire is probably the most important thing, because your desires shape so much about you in that universe and in that power scaling, like with Nin and how Nin comes about. And every character's desires and how they compete are important, which is why my criticisms of Hunter x Hunter come out, even though I love the series, because I think it does such an excellent job, and I think this OP does such an excellent job of hitting on that theme of desires, and yet some of the characters that you would think have the deepest desires, people like the Phantom Troop, their desires are some of the least explored. And Togashi has written one of my favorite things ever, Yu Yu Hakusho, and I know he has the ability to, and may do it in the future, but I think that Hunter x Hunter has a lot of room to go.
That's fair. And speaking on desire in Hunter x Hunter, I totally see that. Because for a lot of the Phantom Troop, I don't really see their desire explored super well. But in other aspects of Hunter x Hunter, I see it as some of the biggest triumphs in the series, to the point where probably the best written character, I would argue, is it's maybe Meruem, right? Basically, his character arc is him realizing that the desires that were put on him need not be his desires, and he can actually find desires that aren't like his genetics telling him to become God.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this before, but my favorite arc of Hunter x Hunter is the election arc.
Yeah.
Because for me, next to Meruem, Periston is the best written character in Hunter x Hunter. Because his desires are so distorted, and the distortion comes through in a way, and then you get Jing, finally. Jing? Ging?
Jing is the pronunciation. Okay.
You get him and the sort of bullheadedness and this very clear desire to do the right thing in some way, live up to some ideal, confronting a distorted desire like Periston. And I feel like it explores things in the series in a way that had only been done when Meruem was at the forefront of the Chimera Ant arc. And the reason I rank the election arc higher than the Chimera Ant arc is literally just because the entire election arc is that kind of idealistic battle. And while you sort of get that with the Royal Guard, it hits the hardest when you're doing it directly with Meruem, and I wanted to see more Meruem.
That's, I just completely agree. And I have high, if reserved, hopes for Periston and Jing's specific return to the forefront as the like Secession War arc continues in the manga, whenever chapters eventually come out.
Yeah, and I think that like says my piece about Hunter x Hunter pretty effectively, if you wanted to say anything more before we moved on to the next OP.
No, I think that's a pretty good spot to go on. You can take it away. I have two more, just letting you know.
I also have two more, but I'm about to go into it. So the next one, going back into something a little bit harder, is Chase by Bato, which is from JoJo's Part 4. I love all the JoJo's Part 4 OPs. I think that Part 4 was the strongest Part 4 OPs, and I hope that my favorite part when it's finally animated, which is Part 7 Steel Ball Run, has OPs on the level of Part 4. I hope they do it as well. Not saying that Parts 1, 2, 3, or Part 5 didn't have great OPs, because they do.
Before we talk about Chase, I want to give the audience the context of what we do with JoJo's Bizarre Adventures. it has become a running joke at our school where we live that our friends need to see all of the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure openings in like one of those compilation videos before we feel like they truly know us, because whenever we play it, we cannot take our eyes off the screen, and both of us will sing along to every part that we can, like the Sonochino Sadames or the breakdown of Great Days, or the Fighting Gold. So JoJo's OPs was a difficult thing for us, and it's the reason we put the only one OP per series limit on this discussion.
Yeah, because we just love it. We love JoJo's and we love those OPs.
Is Chase your favorite JoJo's OP?
Chase is my favorite JoJo's OP. And okay, that is hard for me to say because Crazy Noisy Bizarre Town and Great Days are amazing thematically as well. But Chase hits on a lot of things that we've talked about great anime OPs. I'm going to start with just the visuals. The visuals are different from both of the other OPs in Part 4 in that they're a lot darker. You see this idealized image of Josuke and the gang, because this comes in what should be a lull in the story. Some time when Josuke has found some peace in his life. His friends are together. Everyone should be finally on the upswing after having to deal with the terrible, terrible events of the crazy, noisy, bizarre town, right? And this peace has been shattered by the serial killer Yoshikage Kira. And the entire opening is just almost from Kira's perspective, as far as like the visuals of watching Josuke and watching his friends and doing a film reel strip that reveals the history of Kira to the people who know Kira's history. And it also, I think, the coolest visual trick they pull off. A character that dies, who I'm not going to spoil because Part 4 is still relatively new.
That's true.
Kira cuts his nails because he wants to be the most average person possible. He wants to live a quiet and peaceful life. And as he cuts his nails, that you get to see in the opening, he's also in the reflection of a picture of Josuke and his friends cutting off the head of the first member of Josuke's friend group that he kills.
It's insane, first of all, the stuff that David Pro gets away with in these OPs.
Oh, yeah.
Just like flat out. And I love that visual trick. And the other visual trick I would point quick note to before going to the song, which I also think is excellent, yeah, is at the end of both Crazy Noisy Bizarre Town and Chase, our protagonist and Josuke's main group are pointing to the sky.
And, which doesn't get a payoff till the last OP.
And the last OP, Great Days, one of the last shots, at least in before they do the changing OP thing and like rewind time and all that, one of the last shots, it shows finally after like 30 episodes what they are pointing to. And what they are pointing to is the memory of everyone who has died in the sky. And it's shown through this shot where they draw clouds around the outside. And in the clouds is everyone that Kira has killed that they cared about.
Which, as a general idea, is already cool. But for anyone who's listening to this that doesn't necessarily watch anime regularly, because we recommend this podcast to a lot of our friends because we want our friends to participate in the things that we're doing. This is a big visual trope, anime characters pointing to the sky. And it usually has some symbolism, but none as tangible as when it pans up and you see the ghost of all of those dead friends.
For context of how important pointing and palming at the sky and the sun and the moon is within anime, for those who may not be as entrenched in this as we are, one of the things Xavier texted me after the uploading of our first episode at like 2 a.m, he texts me, "Trey, I feel like I need to go out and stand in my backyard and just palm the sky right now in victory."
Yeah.
And I messaged him and said, I would do it if there wasn't like a beeper that went off when I walked out my back door that would wake my family up. You know, I would go out there and palm the moon right now because this is like a massive, icon and like image choice throughout anime, and it's really incredible to see it taken to such an extreme degree.
As for the song itself, the song is a very intense hard rock song, which already makes this stand out among the three Part 4 OPs, which are generally more jovial in tone, and this one's really fucking serious and grungy.
Specifically Crazy Noisy Bizarre Town, but this one is dark compared to the other Diamond is Unbreakable OPs.
And it's because Josuke's peace that he thought he had has been interrupted, and he's lost a friend at the very beginning of this arc, and he's learning about this terrible serial killer, who I think is the best serial killer in media. And it's about Josuke chasing him and trying to figure out who he is, because no one knows the true identity of Yoshikage Kira. They just know his name, because he's that good at living a mild-mannered life. And if you interpret it in the reverse, Kira's peace and quiet, because when we're introduced to Kira, he says, I just want to live a peaceful life, has been interrupted because he's being chased by Josuke, and he knows someone is looking for him after all of these years. So now he has to figure out who's chasing him. And by doing this, they're both caught in a chase. So the very song Chase, where the chorus is literally, I'll chase you, wherever you go, I'll chase you, is referring to both the main protagonist and the main antagonist to each other.
During that, I looked up the lyrics to double check, and reading all of the lyrics, it gets even more ridiculous. My peaceful moments have already collapsed, being unconcerned so nonchalant, before I even noticed it had been torn away. If I'm going to get it back, I have to act right away. I'll chase you anywhere. I'll chase you anytime. You know I'll chase you. There is no escape.
Which just like, even now, sends chills down my spine. And JoJo's Part 4 does this a lot, where the OPs tell things from both sides of the lens. it's just an amazing, it's an amazing visual trick. And like in Great Days, when it rewinds, hearkening to a reveal about one of Kira's powers, it's an amazing audio trick. And it's an amazing lyrical trick that it relates to both characters that just really brings something extra.
Is this the OP that also has the visual of like the repeated opening doors and all of the mirrors that happen as it like kind of flies through the town and shows you all of the side characters' relationships to each other?
Yep, and it also shows you all of the relevant locations once you've watched the entire season that can help you piece together who Yoshikage Kira is if you didn't get to see him as an audience member.
I also love, and this is a thing that they do really, really, really well, especially in the anime of Part 4, is the model for Yoshikage Kira is in the background of a lot of scenes before anyone even realizes there's a serial killer in the town of Morio. So by the time you get to Chase, and by the time you get to this character start, like this character being introduced into the story, you're already in the uncanny valley of like, oh my God, who is it? Why do I know that I've seen that face before? And it just adds to the killer like darkness of this track.
I'm also going to put on my academic hat for just a little
bit. Go for it.
Only for a little bit. So Kristeva's theory of the abstract talks about the abject, or not, I'm sorry, of the abject and abjection. The abject is something that we essentially eject from ourselves and become cognizant of its separation, but also being a part of us. And something that Josuke learns about himself through chasing Kira is how close he is to this sort of attitude that Kira has about the world. And it causes an emotional recoil for Josuke. And I think that also thematically fits with Chase actually being from both of their perspectives.
On that note, because I think putting the academic hat on is always a perfect time to like bring it back into something else. Even if like what you said was really, really like perfect. I want to go to a lighter OP so that we don't emotionally break our audience talking about serial killers.
That's fair. But again, best serial killer in media. If you like true crime or anything like that, like don't even bother watching the rest of JoJo's as much as I want you to watch all of JoJo's. Watch Part 4.
Yeah, the beauty of JoJo's is you don't need to watch all of the parts at all. It's not necessary. And Part 4 is just one of the best serial killer stories ever penned. Hirohiko Araki is a genius beyond merit. On that note, I want to talk about an OP that I love and a song that I sing along even if I don't know the lyrics to a series that I have never read or watched. And that is Bake Monogatari's fourth OP, Renai Circulation by Kana Hanazawa.
Neither of us have ever seen this series, but both of us like this OP.
A friend of mine continually tells me how much I would love Monogatari, and I agree. And it is all of Monogatari is on the watch list, and I hope we can watch some of this fall. But I haven't had the time. I still haven't even finished reading Berserk. I've been so busy. But this song, I don't care if you hate anime. This song is so cute, it brings me physical pain. And from the start, even just like Kana Hanazawa just going, say no, and then the beat kicking in, puts my emotional state through the roof with joy. Get rid of like every other thing we've talked about making us happy. Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, take that shit out. Get it out the bread, okay? That's a beautiful reference. Take that shit out the bread, right? Renai's Circulation is the leading song on the Get Me Hyped, Get Me Happy playlist on my phone. Now, we can't talk about this a lot, I'll be real, because neither of us know anything really about Monogatari. I don't even know the main character's name who is singing all of these things.
Absolutely not.
But the visuals of this OP are very happy and very like pastel, and there's lots of just like normal geometric shape, like tons of triangles and stuff. And this character, like, I think actually coloring in coloring books and just walking around to the beat and just dancing and just generally being cheery. And I think there's no better way for me to explain how the emotions of an opening can affect me than by saying, I am emotionally affected by the OP of a series that I know literally nothing about other than that there's a crab god.
There's also, like, vampires and half-vampires, I think. I don't even fucking know, man.
We technically were lying. I know a little bit more about Monogatari because there's one really good fight scene where, like, this kind of magic power girl just beats the ever-living shit out of her brother and, like, destroys, like, an overpass. And it looks really good and has good hand-to-hand combat animation. And that's the only other thing I know about Monogatari.
This is true. I really like this OP, and it's because it's so peppy and cheerful, and it, like, runs through your head, like, over and over and over again, which may have something to do with the theme. I have no idea. Couldn't tell you, have no analysis, have no deep thoughts. I just really enjoy it, and it makes me really interested in the series, which I think is its greatest strength, in that although I don't know what the series is about, and I haven't found the time to watch it yet, it will eternally be on my to-watch list, even though I know that it's about as complex a web as Fate. But guess what? I've already watched and read all of Fate, bitch.
Yeah. And the thing is, right, I know, as soon as I did the say no, your brain went, ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, no, instantly. Yeah,
like, did the beat immediately, and at least for some of the people who have heard this OP in the audience, I know that when I did the say no, the same thing happened to you. And you can't lie to me and say it didn't, because it happened to me. Like, when I said the say no. And there's nothing else I have to say. Like, that's just it. Just take it away. Everyone go look up the Bakke Monogatari, one word, opening number 4, and just have a good time. Like, drink some tea or something. Just be happy.
Yeah. And okay, so I guess I'll end this off with our last OP, and this episode might run a bit short, which I think is fine, because I just like talking OPs. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Sweet. So, Freckles from Rurouni Kenshin.
Yes.
Is another one of those songs, like Yui's again, that's sung in a sweet voice about actually really serious subject matter. With the themes of Rurouni Kenshin and the plot of Rurouni Kenshin. And I don't have, like, a big, deep dive down into it, because I think that there doesn't need to be one. But Freckles as a song is sort of about this lost hope and this lost love and this want to stay positive. And whether or not life and your happiness had any meaning, even though it's sung very sweetly and could just be passed off as a peppy pop song. And there's also a really good English translation that's official.
Oh, there's an official English translation? That's kind of rare.
Yeah, no, when you hear the English version of Freckles, like, that's official.
Nice.
And it just hits me deep, and maybe it's just that I reflect on life a lot, and the character of Kenshin's life and how he acts is based entirely on his reflections of what he's done in life. But that and, like, the Yu Yu Hakusho openings are two OPs that never fail to put me in an introspective mood.
And because of you, Rurouni Kenshin is on my to-read list. I probably won't watch it, but I do intend to read it because I've heard really good things. The first time it was put on my list was watching Digi's 28th birthday video, where she went, well, I'm as old as Kenshin, and I'm as old as Gintoki from Gintama now. That's pretty weird. So it's been there, and I watched Freckles before we started today in our pre-production, which takes 25 hours every time. And I watched it, and man, it just looked good and sound good. Like, I know that's, hey, Trey, great job being so smart about anime, but I don't know anything about the series, and I just kind of enjoyed it. I don't know what else the people want me to say. I pulled up the English lyrics. We can talk about those.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about one stanza in particular.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It's the stanza that hits me the hardest. All the memories I have are beautiful in my mind, but they don't feed the hunger deep inside my soul. And tonight I thought I'd just be sitting in my sorrow. And now I must wonder why. What did it really mean to you? I just can't see it anymore. And again, this is sung in a very sweet, upbeat, peppy voice, and it doesn't seem to match at all.
Just reading that, like reading along while you read it out loud, holy shit, dude. No duh, this song gets you in an introspective mood. That's insane. Also beautiful, by the way.
Oh no, it's amazing. And so much of Kenshin's character, who is the main character of this anime, is predicated on his ability to enjoy the little things in life because of all the death and terrible things he's seen. But in those moments when he's alone and he's forced to confront his past, he struggles with what his past life really meant because he sort of was crucial to the institution of the Meiji era in Japan. So the idea that samurai would no longer be able to oppress the poorer class because only the military police would have real authority and there would be no more shogunate. And he had to do a lot to get there. And despite the fact that like the military even comes to him one day and tries to give him a commission and says, you know, you're a hero of the country, he can't shake the fact that what he essentially is a glorified murderer.
Doesn't Kenshin even use now like a reverse katana where the blade is on the inside so as not to kill people?
Yeah, and like you can still kill people with it.
Yeah.
Basically like club them to death, but he is vehemently, for the most part, unless pushed to the absolute extremes, against killing anymore. And it's not that he is afraid to kill. He just views loss of life in an era that he fought for to be peaceful is an absolute waste and an absolute disrespect to all of the lives he's taken and the lives that were given by his friends to usher in this era.
That's just really beautiful. Like reading along with the lyrics, there's not another word for it, honestly. I have nothing else to say.
It's just such a great series, and maybe I just like war dramas, and maybe it just plays on me being a nerd for Japanese history, and it covering a lot of like Meiji era and sword police politics, but it's one of those series that hits deep, and the OP carries the series themes perfectly.
Hell yeah. Everyone, myself included, go read and watch Rurouni Kenshin. It's critically acclaimed for a reason, and everyone likes it for a reason. That being said, on such a note of beauty, I want to bring us away from beauty towards something that every single person listening to this podcast needs to hear. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Kaiji Ultimate Survivor by by Fukumoto. I believe that's this person's name. I'm almost 100% sure. Is a slept-on masterpiece of the modern era, and if any of you can deal with graphic content in the slightest, you need to go watch it now.
If you can watch Game of Thrones, you can watch fucking Kaiji. Don't give me that bullshit.
No. Kaiji is not that bad, right? Admittedly, it does get graphic at some times, and it's mostly just tense, right? But oh my god. First of all, Kaiji Ultimate Survivor, I think it's like a strong 9. I adore it beyond words. You gotta get past the art style, which is weird because Fukumoto has a very unique art style and he uses a lot of visual metaphor, but Studio Madhouse made it and I promise it's so good. I promise.
Oh yeah. Also, on the topic of art style, just as a weird side note, I know this is the OP episode and character designs were like an episode ago.
This is freeform, you know that.
The Madhouse way that they do Kaiji would be fucking almost perfect for a Shaman King series.
Oh my, it'd be so good. Because Fukumoto has all this heavy line work and all these rough edges in the same way that the Shaman King art does. It's similar to JoJo's, except JoJo's does heavy line work with a lot of smooth edges.
Yeah, like it's way more stylized, whereas they're trying to go for almost a hard grit.
Yeah, and oh my god, I would love to see like a Kaiji Madhouse style Shaman King. That'd be incredible. We'll update you guys on the anime news when that comes through. Speaking of anime news, that's our segue, boys and girls. It's time for Trey's anime news, baby. Yes, I knew I'd get that in. Okay. So before I tell you about Kaiji's OP being a banger, I need to tell you that we got information about a new Studio Ghibli film.
Woo!
Yeah! Now, this Studio Ghibli film, I am going to double check the name here because I don't want to mess it up because I have a lot of respect for the studio and the work they do. Do-do-do-do-do. Let me go. Okay. Studio Ghibli has unveiled their new film, Earwig and the Witch, or Ayatamaho, and it is based off of Diana Wynne Jones's novel of the same name. And for those who know that name, Diana Wynne Jones is the woman who wrote Howl's Moving Castle, which is another film that Studio Ghibli has adapted to animation. What is special about this is that this film will be directed by Gorō Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki's son, who had previously directed Earthsea and another film. But it will be a direct-to-TV movie made in partnership with NHK that is the first entirely CG animated feature from the studio. And that may be a bit off-putting for some of you, this is what Gorō Miyazaki is good at, and he has previously won awards for short films done entirely in CG, and is one of, at least looking to be, one of the leading CG feature-length directors currently working. So I'm super excited, and the studio claims that they should have it done eventually. which is about all you're going to get. Because you ask them, hey, that new Hayao Miyazaki movie, when's that coming? Eventually. That new Gorō Miyazaki movie, when's that coming? Eventually. Just shut up and just wait. The art takes time. Thus concludes Trey's Anime News Corner.
Back to OPs.
Okay. Our final OP of the evening, of the morning, evening for recording, morning for airing, is The Future Is in Our Hands, the first opening from Kaiji Ultimate Survivor. Xavier told me not to talk about this, but I don't care what Xavier thinks. We translated that OP ourselves before finding the English name, because we read the Japanese name and said, wait, I know what some of those words are, and we actually got it right, and I'm really proud of the weeb level we've achieved.
Jesus Christ. Like I said, I can read decently. I can't speak well at all.
Nor can I, which is why I won't try and pronounce it. But The Future is in Our Hands is sung by the voice actor who voices Kaiji, the main character of Kaiji Ultimate Survivor, Masato Hagiwara. And it's a cover of a song, but basically Kaiji is a series about a man who is good at not dying. He does not have a specific skill. He is not particularly above average in any way. In fact, the series starts with him being a little bit too nice and co-signing like a lease, basically the whole thing foreclosing, and then the mafia coming and arresting him and saying, we know you co-signed this for your friend, but we can't find your friend, so you're gonna win his debt back, bitch. And it is a 2-season long adaptation of the first few volumes of like a 15 volume long series. Actually, it's like 30 volumes, I'm sorry. And it's all high intensity, high stakes, high complexity gambling games to the death, or to the near death. And the entire series, you watch this man, Kaiji, look at the situation around him and figure out exactly what he needs to do to not fucking die. Whether it be him, like, drawing a straight line on his shoes so they can better walk across, like a tight platform up in the air, or him looking at a massive card game-based version of Rock, Paper, Scissors and doing the math on how he can avoid dying and getting kicked off of this, like, debt boat. It is high-octane, high-intensity, high-stress with incredible visual metaphors to convey the emotions of these characters through and through. That is what the whole series is about. And I think The Future Is in Our Hands is one of the hypest, most get you ready for an episode of anime openings I've ever heard. And yes, I'm using this OP slot to shill for how good Kaiji is, but also I think this is my go-to example of an anime that gets you of an opening that gets you ready to watch some anime. Whereas earlier you talked about things like the Dragon Ball openings doing that really well, this does it specifically for watching something as tense as Kaiji perfectly. And I'm reading the lyrics right now, and they're exactly what you would expect, which is it's a hard rock heavy metal song where all of the lyrics are about literally being a big fan of living, there being too much dread and suffering, and me figuring out how to survive all of the big thrills to avoid death, and how we will overthrow the things in our path because the future is in our hands.
Which I think, Kaiji deserves to be shilled for. But also, more than just, like, getting you ready to watch anime. Like, getting you hyped to watch anime.
Yeah.
It's one of the few OPs on this list that I would say, both visually and as audio, puts you into the tenseness immediately. Because we haven't talked about, like, any Attack on Titan OPs or anything like that. Yeah. So I think this is the best OP at getting you into the world of the specific anime that you're watching.
That is completely fair. Because when I say, like, Death Parade's tone is perfect for, like Flyer's tone for Death Parade is perfect for Death Parade, this is an even better perfect. And I don't really know how to explain that other than to tell someone to watch it. Because you watch it, and the facial artwork done in this opening is second to none in conveying intense emotion, and that is one of the strengths of the series for me. And you are immediately in Kaiji's shoes, and you feel like you are standing next to a man who is fighting dirt, tooth, and nail to avoid basically being sold into death slavery. And this opening is for the entire first season. And I won't spoil how the first season goes, because I want everyone to go watch this series or read this series. But the way this opening, even from the first episode, if you don't realize it, foreshadows the tone of the end of the first season going into the second season is incredible. Kaiji's voice actor literally screams during this OP, the drums hit like bombs. The entire essence of this OP is you are going to feel the emotion Kaiji feels, and you feeling and understanding the emotions of Kaiji is basically half of the point of Kaiji.
Yeah, and I think that I don't think Kaiji has a theme exactly. That's everything, of course, has a theme, right? But I think the Kaiji is stronger in the idea of, like, storytelling motifs and authorial intent. And I think that the OP also gets this across really well, especially with the voice actor literally screaming, as has been said. And I think that it's because of this intent about how the story structure is going to be that Kaiji puts you into the world so effectively. When, again, this is just what my mind goes to when I think of world-building OPs. The reason something like Attack on Titan's OPs work for world-building is because you're put instantly into, like, the military march mindset, and you recognize those audio cues. Kaiji's not working off of, like, preconceived audio cues. It's all raw emotion.
And raw emotion is one of the strengths of Kaiji, which is how I think it all gets tied together. Specifically through visual metaphors, right? Like, my favorite example is that in another one of Fukumoto's manga, there is a visual metaphor that lasts multiple chapters where a character journeys through hell to rescue another character, and those multiple chapters are a visual metaphor for one guy placing one tile in a game of Mahjong. That is how seriously Fukumoto takes making sure the audience understands the emotions and the stakes of his story and of his characters. And Kaiji's opening, through the genius of Madhouse's editing and choices in creating this opening, shows you exactly that, which I think is the appeal of most of Fukumoto's work.
I agree. And I think that, like, this is a talent that needs to be respected, because it's one of those things that I think is only matched by like a couple things in the industry. And the only one that I can think of immediately off the top of my head is Kaguya-sama Love is War, yeah. As far as amazing visual metaphor.
Yes, that is the series that people keep bringing up whenever I like try and praise how good the visual metaphors are in Fukumoto's work. Everyone goes Kaguya-sama, and I go, yep, that's the only other thing I can think of at all that even comes close. And if you enjoy Kaguya-sama in the way it conveys emotion specifically, while Kaiji is a very different series and Fukumoto is a very different author, I think you may find a lot of enjoyment in the series, because I happen to love both of those series very dearly.
Or if you just like gambling, like not even in a death game way, just in a gambling way, like it's a very fun gambling series.
This might be my favorite gambling series. There is a point in this series, this is not a big spoiler, where people are betting millions of dollars and Kaiji is gambling with the centimeters between his eardrum and a screwdriver.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous the heights that gambling hits in this series, and it is my favorite gambling series probably ever.
That's all I really have to say about the OP, so if you didn't have any closing thoughts, we can do closing thoughts for the episode.
That's it. Everyone should go watch Kaiji, like, or read it, as soon as you can. And just know, we're gonna do more episodes about OPs, because it is a common ritual in our household to just sit down and watch different OPs back and forth, where everyone passes like the remote around and picks another one for like hours on end. You got any closing thoughts for the episode? Like, what's cooking in there, pal?
for the episode, I guess I just want to end it like we've been ending it for the past two, in that super encourage anyone listening to go out and watch these series if you haven't, but also in your everyday media consumption. And I don't just mean like anime. Look at like the openings for these things, because I do think there's always something in the opening, even like fucking Law and Order when they do the big yell with whatever the Law and Order season with Horatio is.
Yes.
Like, there's something there, and I think it adds to your enjoyment of a series when you start picking it apart.
Look, America's got some bangers, right? They got the drum riff at the start of Hawaii Five-0. We got some heat. We're not out of the game. We got the brrr of Hawaii Five-0, you know?
Yeah, and I want to say, like, we have shit-talked American television a little bit. I love American television. I love Western television. I just think this is something that we've lost track of a little bit.
Yeah, and once again, no disrespect to American media in this sense. I actually really, really love the Adventure Time and Gravity Falls OPs. I think those openings are both kind of incredible for what they're trying to do. Like, no trash talk to series of other nations, even if we're basically required to be weeb trash on this podcast.
Yeah. So with that, have a good morning or evening or afternoon, and thank you for listening as always.